भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 3 टेक्स्ट 30। Chapter entitled, Yamaraj Instructs His Messengers.
Tat shamayatam sa bhagavan purusa purno. Narayana sva purusair yadasta karmana. स्वानाम अहो ना विदुषाम रचितांजलिनाम तत्शमयताम स भगवान पुरुषो पूर्णो नारायण स्वपुरुषैर्यदस्तकर्मणा स्वानामहो न विदुषां रतिचाञ्जलीनां शान्तिर्गरीयसि नाम पुरुष भूम्ने तत्क्षमायताम स भगवान पुरुषो पूर्णो पुराणो नारायण स्वपुरुषैर्यदस्तकृतं न स्वनामहो न विदुषां रचितांजलीनां शान्तिर्गरियसि नाम पुरुषाय भूम्ने
Thank you. Mataji.
Acham yatam sa Bhagavan Purusha Purano.
Tat, that, shamayatam, let it be excused. Sa, he, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purusha, the Supreme Person. Purana, the oldest. Narayana, Lord Narayana. Swapurusai, by my own servants. Yat, which. Asat, impudence. Kritam, performed. Na, of us. Swanam, of my own men. Aho, alas. Na vidusam, not knowing. Raticha Anjalinam, folding our hands together to beg your pardon. Shanti, forgiveness. Gariyasi, in the glorious. Nama, respectful obeisances. Purusaya, unto the person. Bhumne, Supreme and all-pervading. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, then Yamaraj, considering himself and his servants to be offenders, spoke as follows, begging pardon from the Lord. O my Lord, my servants have surely committed a great offense by arresting a Vaishnava such as Ajamil. O Narayana, O Supreme and oldest person, please forgive us. Because of our ignorance, we failed to recognize Ajamil as a servant of your Lordship. And thus we have certainly committed a great offense. Therefore, with folded hands, we beg your pardon. My Lord, since you are supremely merciful and are always full of good qualities, please pardon us. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. Lord Yamaraj took upon himself the responsibility of the offense committed by his servants. If the servant of an establishment makes a mistake, the establishment takes responsibility for it. Although Yamaraj is above offenses, his servants, practically with his permission, went to arrest Ajamil, which was a great offense. The Nyaya Shastra confirms, Brithya Parade Swamino Danda. If a servant makes a mistake, the master is punishable because he is responsible for the offense. Taking this seriously, Yamaraj, along with his servants, prayed with folded hands to be excused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. Om Ajnana Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilita Mena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Devamrita Swamini Tinamine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pachatya Desitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavanda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Last time I gave class, few devotees emailed me saying that they wanted to ask questions from the internet. I don't know, maybe Achyuta Prabhu can keep an eye if anybody has questions from the internet. So, it's a very beautiful translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And in this verse, we can see how Yamaraj is actually very, very humble. Extremely humble, and is setting a great example for all his servants and for all of us. Because the general tendency, especially if you're in a position of an authority or a controller, we don't want to be known as the one who made mistake. And the tendency is to say anything to justify our activities and to be able to have the last word. And the tendency of the conditioned soul is always to blame others for our mistakes. It's always like somebody else's fault. And this is the general tendency. But it's explained that when we point one finger at somebody, about three fingers are pointing towards us. So this is general tendency, but Yamaraj is taking such a humble position, even though he was doing his service, he's begging for forgiveness. Prabhupada gives an example, very nice example, to point out this tendency of how we would say anything to have the last word. Prabhupada said there were two guys, they were fighting, arguing over something like what instrument was used to cut a piece of paper. And one said it was a knife. The other one said it was a pair of scissors. So the one who said it was the knife was the cause, he actually pushed the other one who thought the scissors was the cause into a river. And as this person was drowning in the river, he put his hands up and went like this. Still he's showing it was scissors. He was so stubborn, even as he was drowning, he wanted to prove his point. But a Vaishnava's position is actually very different. Very different. A Vaishnava is always taking a humble position. And a Vaishnava is actually growing in every circumstance. A Vaishnava is always looking for opportunity for service and how he can take responsibility and how he can grow. The example is given. It's actually said that there are no impediments to grow spiritually. There's nothing that can stop us from growing spiritually. Doesn't matter what the circumstances. The example is given, there was a, in a village, there was like a useless donkey that actually fell into a blind well. And the washerman was so cruel and tired of this donkey, decided to bury this donkey inside this well. He didn't want it to pick him up and bring him outside. So with the help of some villagers, the washerman started throwing dirt to bury the donkey alive inside the well. But every time they threw dirt, the donkey shook the dirt off and then came up a little bit. And then the donkey used the dirt that they were using him to bury him as steps to come out of the well and freed himself. So it says any situation seems like so-called impediment, we can actually grow, and depending on our attitude and our humility. There was a similar pastime in the third canto, end of third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that talks about the four Kumaras. When they actually went to see Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, they were actually stopped by the Vishnu, what are they called? Jayavijay, but what are they called? The gatekeepers. They were actually stopped by the gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, saying that you cannot come in. Because, you know, the Kumaras, the four Kumaras, they didn't want to be influenced by the modes of material nature, so they remained as like a five-year-old children. And they were naked. So Jaya and Vijaya saw them and said, you know, maybe bring your parents or something, you know, like, this is not the standard. So the Kumaras got offended and they cursed Jaya and Vijaya. And Vishnu, it's explained, personally showed up to the gates where this cursing going on, where this argument was going on. And Vishnu was speaking so beautifully. It was actually a very, very beautiful chapter to read. The mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vishnu is saying that, actually, I am the offender. Even though Jaya and Vijaya offended the Kumaras, Vishnu is saying, I am the offender because I am responsible. I am the one who put them there. So Vishnu is saying the master is responsible for the servant's mistakes. And Vishnu gives the example, just like a spot of leprosy in a beautiful body can destroy the beauty of the whole body. Similarly, even a small mistake committed by the servants can actually destroy the reputation of the master. And Vishnu goes on glorifying the devotees, how important the position of a Vaishnava is. And Vishnu says that I'm glorified as being Bhagavan and full of all opulences, and I'm able to give liberation. And Goddess of Fortune is personally present with me all the time. It is all simply because I serve the Vaishnavas. He's, you know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is giving all credit for his position to be so great just because he's the servant of the Vaishnavas. And he says, Lakshmi is actually known as Chanchala, means she doesn't stay in one place for a long time, but she's eternally engaged in my service just because I'm engaged in the service of the Vaishnavas. And Vishnu is personally coming and begging forgiveness from the Kumaras. And he's saying, certainly my servants, Jaya and Vijaya, are at fault for not allowing you inside the spiritual world. And I take the responsibility. And I know you Prabhus have cursed him to take birth in the material world. And I'm not expecting you to take back the curse. But Vishnu is requesting them, please see that they can come back to me very quickly. Vishnu is admitting that the faults committed by Jaya and Vijaya was actually his fault, and the curse is not to be taken back, but he's just requesting that please see that they can come back to the Vaikuntha planets as soon as possible. So according to this purport, Prabhupada is writing, the master is actually responsible. There's this beautiful pastime of Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya was actually sent to Gurukula at a very young age. And he was at his guru's ashram when he was like 5 years old. And one day, there was nobody there in the ashram. Just Yamunacharya was there and some messengers, some disciples of this big pandit called Kolahala approached Yamunacharya. And they were so arrogant. And they said, where is your guru, Yamunacharya? And Yamunacharya said, oh, he's not in town. Can I help you somehow? Why do you look for my guru in an angry mood? And they said, actually, Kolahala belongs to the king's court. He's the pandit of the court. And whoever is defeated by Kolahala must pay tax. But your guru has not paid tax, in a long time. So we're wondering if he's gone crazy or why is he making such an offense? Why does he dare to make such an offense? So we've come to ask him this question. And then Yamunacharya looked at them and said, you know what? Your guru is actually a fool number one. And they were like astonished. 5-year-old boy calling Kolahala as a fool number one. And the messenger said, how do you know? And Yamunacharya said, just by your behavior, I can tell the position of your guru. If he's trained his disciples to be arrogant like you guys, that is actually the proof. And then Yamunacharya actually told the messenger saying, go and tell Kolahala that I want to debate with him on behalf of my guru. And the messengers actually went back and told the king and the pandit that, you know, this 5-year-old boy wants to debate. And the law is that anyone who wants to debate is given a chance to debate. So the king said, okay, fine, you know, it's going to be fun, but 5-year-old boy fighting with Kolahala. You know. So the king sent the messenger saying, okay, but then Yamunacharya said, I'm going to fight, I'm going to debate, I'm going to argue, I'm not going to walk. Bring me the procession, royal procession, so I can go in a respectable way. So they sent the procession of musical instruments and elephants and, you know, all kinds of festival mood. So Yamunacharya arrived in the court and there were actually defeated by Kolahala. And they were all praying very intensely that this little kid will defeat this guy and crush his pride. And then the debate began that, you know, the Kolahala started asking questions to Yamunacharya. And Yamunacharya easily answered all these questions. And Yamunacharya actually chastised Kolahala saying, what is this? You're asking such easy questions. Just because I'm small, you judge a person by his size? That's not a pandit. You should ask me something more difficult if you can. And Kolahala was actually bewildered and he lost his words. He ran out of questions. So Kolahala being embarrassed because everybody is cheering Yamunacharya, and Kolahala was embarrassed. And he said, if you think I'm not qualified to ask questions, why don't you ask me questions? Then I will answer you. And Yamunacharya said, yes, I will ask you 3 questions and you must prove me wrong. And Yamunacharya said, the first thing is that your mother is a barren lady. And Kolahala was like, angry. He said, what do you mean? I'm the son of my mother and you're calling my mother a barren lady and I'm supposed to prove that wrong? This is nonsense. Ask something else. And then Yamunacharya said, the king is actually a pious person. And Kolahala was bewildered. King is a pious person and I'm supposed to refute this argument and get hanged or something. So he couldn't answer that. And Kolahala said, this boy is so nonsense and he doesn't know how to speak in public. He should be hanged and all these things. And everybody was cheering. No, 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 no. This is a debate. Go on asking Yamunacharya. And Yamunacharya said, I'll ask one final question. You should prove me wrong. And the Yamunacharya said, the queen is the most chaste lady in the whole kingdom. And then Kolahala admitted that, you know, this is all like nonsense. There's nobody who can refute these arguments. See if you can do it yourself. And Yamunacharya said, sure, I can. And he said, the first thing is your mother is a barren lady because according to the Vedas, anybody who has only one son is as good as being barren. So in that sense, you're the only son of your mother. So your mother is a barren lady. And the other thing is the king is not pious. because I said you should refute this argument. The king is not pious because the king actually takes 1/4 of all the citizens' karma. Therefore, in the age of Kali, there are more sinful persons than pious persons. The king is responsible for 1/4 of all the citizens' karma. Therefore, he's not a pious man. And the third point he said was the queen is the most chaste lady. And he said she's not because the king represents at least 7 demigods. So that's the case, then the queen is not a chaste lady because she's associating with somebody that represents, you know, 7 or more demigods. So in this way, Yamunacharya actually crushed the pride of Kolahala. And the king and the queen adapted Yamunacharya and gave him all the kingdom. So the point was that Yamunacharya was saying 2 points. One is that you can tell the disciples from the guru. And also the master is responsible for all his dependents, 1/4 of their karma. Not just like morally, like also according to the laws of nature. If you have a dependent and you share 1/4 of their karma. That's why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if I can have children and make them Krishna conscious, I'm willing to have hundreds of children. But he remained a Naistik Brahmachari. That says something. So this is the position that devotees and Krishna are very, very humble and grateful. Very humble. It's like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking with Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya. Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, when he met Lord Chaitanya, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya was actually a great Mayavad sannyasi. And he was actually very impressed by the features and the beauty and the renunciation of Lord Chaitanya. But Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya said, this boy, 24-year-old, looking so beautiful, has taken sannyas. So unless I instruct him in the Vedanta philosophies, no way he's going to remain, he's going to last. So he took him to the side, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, and started instructing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the Vedanta philosophy. And 7 days went by and Mahaprabhu has not said a word. Generally, like, you know, when you're talking to somebody, we want to show how much we know, how scholarly we are, and we never let the other person talk. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard him out for 7 days, and then finally, Sarvabhauma was bewildered and said, I've been speaking for 7 days, you haven't said a word. Do you understand Vedanta philosophy? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, I understand Vedanta philosophy very well. It's as bright as a sunshine. But you, Sarvabhauma, is like a dark cloud that's covering the sunshine like Vedanta philosophy with your interpretation. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was actually very moved by the humility of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the explanations he gave. And same way, here in this purport, in the translation, Yamaraj is taking a humble position, saying to Vishnu, I'm sorry that we failed to recognize a position of Ajamila as a Vaishnava. This is the mood. Krishna and the Vaishnavas are always giving credit to others, even if they're not so exalted. And it's explained when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, who is a Vaishnava? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, anyone even chants once the Hare Krishna mantra, I consider them a Vaishnava. That is the mood of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's also another pastime that shows how grateful the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. In the Ramayana, we know that Ram actually pierced with his arrows 7 palm trees just to show Sugriva how powerful he is, how powerful is his arrows. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was doing wandering in this forest, remembering the pastimes of Ram, and he saw these tal trees, these seven palm trees that was actually pierced by the arrows of Ram many, many, many millions of years ago. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually went and embraced these palm trees and sent them back to Godhead from the bodies of these palm trees. Can you imagine how grateful is the Supreme? After millions of years, so many, Ram was even before Krishna. Still, he never forgot. He was so grateful. In the pastimes of Advaita Acharya, inviting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to descend, we recently celebrated Advaita Acharya's appearance, it says that just for one tulsi leaf and a palm full of Ganga water, Krishna is willing to sell himself if it's offered with devotion. Krishna is so grateful. And also, it's explained in the Nectar of Instruction that even if somebody bathes once in Radha Kund, he's sure to regain his spiritual form. There's so many instances where we can see how even though the devotees may not be so qualified, but Krishna and the Vaishnavas are always encouraging and speaking sweet words and uplifting them, not tearing them down just out of envy. And in the pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu, there's actually one beautiful bhajan that says, even if somebody chants once the names of Lord Gauranga, Nityananda Prabhu says, I consider that person my life and soul. Even if you chanted once Gauranga Mahaprabhu's names. And also when Draupadi, the pastime where they were trying to disrobe her, Dushyasan was pulling with the strength of 10,000 elephants and Draupadi was trying to hold on to her sari, but then she let go and just chanted once the name of Govinda with feeling. Krishna reciprocated. That was the sari incarnation. And we all know the famous pastime of Prabhupada when this bum, when he was in the New York Bowery, this bum came to give some toilet paper because there was, you know, as devotees, we don't use toilet paper, but this bum thought like there's no toilet paper in this Hare Krishna, so he came with some rolls of paper and Prabhupada was actually very grateful. So this is the beauty of the spiritual world. Always giving credit to others, always glorifying others, always uplifting others and forgiving. And this is actually the mood. In the material world, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. Doesn't matter if what a person is, how much service a person has done, the materialists only remember the small mistake that person has done. So much service could have been done by a devotee, but then if the devotee makes a mistake, a materialist only focuses on the small mistake that devotee has done. This is the tendency of the material world. And Prabhupada also gives the example of Gandhi. Gandhi actually worked so hard for India, but then Gandhi was actually shot by his own countrymen at the end. This is the position of a human being, especially the materialist, that there's no gratitude. No matter how much you've done, it's only focusing on the faults, and then at the end, you only get blamed. And Prabhupada said, this is actually the test to see if you're in the spiritual world or in the material world. Prabhupada said, just look at yourself and see if you're envious. If you're envious of your fellow devotees, if you're envious of anyone. And if you are, then you're in the material world. And if you're not envious, then you're in the spiritual world. Envious means all the things we just discussed. And non-envious means this, like we're reading in the Bhagavatam. You know, giving respect to other Vaishnavas, glorifying other Vaishnavas, taking a humble position, and not shy, even if we're in a big responsible position, to beg for forgiveness, take a humble position. These are all the qualities by which we can judge whether we are in the material world or in the spiritual world. It's not a rocket science, it's pretty easy. And it's explained in the Vedas that yasyasti bhakti bhagavati akinchana sarvai gunai statra samasate sura, that a person who's God conscious, he possesses all the qualities of the demigods. And it's very hard in Kali Yuga to possess these qualities unless somebody comes across Srila Prabhupada's books, unless we read these books. Prabhupada said, I've written so many books, I slept only 2 hours every night. But many of my students are not reading, so he was very disappointed. And by reading these books, we actually know what the standard is, at least what the standard is, so we can aspire for it, even though it may be a long way for us. But anybody who reads these books is sure to develop all this gospel world mentality, Vaikuntha mentality. It's like I met this devotee yesterday. His name is David. Very, very special person. He recognized me because he's seen me on the internet. But I was surprised. He said, you're Shastrakrit Das? I was like, yes. So, I've seen you on the internet. I started talking to him. He could be a Prabhupada disciple because he's seen Prabhupada a couple of times in San Francisco. But then some devotees have given him books, which was in his shelf for many, many years. And then one day his son was doing some cleaning or something, and he pulled out these books. And then it just something hit him. He said, wow, I have all these books, but I never bothered to read them. So he started reading them. He's such a great personality, such a nice Vaishnava. You can see like how just by reading these books, he says many of his members in the family are not necessarily like devotees. So he keeps all these pots that he uses for cooking and spices and everything in his room clean, only for Krishna, offering for Krishna. His computer, he says, keep it locked. Only he uses for lalive.us, nothing else. And he's so attached to Prabhupada's books and Prabhupada's lectures. He got lots of books from me yesterday. And he's so humble. And he says, you know, I try my little bit, you know. And he said something very profound. He showed me his tulsi beads and says, I'm wearing these tulsi beads, which means nothing bad should go in past the tulsi beads. Nothing bad should come out past the tulsi beads. And he's not even like in the community or like full-time service or so-called, you know, big position. He's a retired person, you know, humble person. But he was very exalted in spiritual life. I was very, very moved just by talking to him. This potency of these books, they can transform anyone. Maybe not, we want like everything Kali Yuga, instant results, instant coffee, everything on the spot. But this can take some time. This person, for example, has gotten books like 30 years ago. Now he's turning out to be a wonderful Vaishnava, so attached to Krishna consciousness. So this is our responsibility, to read these books, understand them, and try to change our character. Prabhupada said, my disciples will be known as ladies and gentlemen. And by reading these books, we can develop the desire at least. And by distributing, the world has a hope. Otherwise, what hope is there? There's none. Everybody is just growing old simply to die and go to the planet of Yamaraj just to and then take birth as an animal. This is the future of Kali Yuga. So I stop here if anybody has any questions. Prema Sankirtan Prabhu. Prabhu.
Shastrakrit, you're a very eloquent speaker and you're a very sweet person. I have to glorify you. Thank you.
Thank
for
you.
Nice class. My question is, according to your class, tendencies to forgive to somebody, you know, devotee, forgive, you know, some other devotee, what's happened, what he said, what he did, but is, I heard, is not tendency to forget. Can you give some insight how to really forget what's happened before? Because one time, I cannot remember when I read, then Prabhupada said we should live here and now, like what Buddhists said, Zen Buddhists, live now, here. That means we should not, you know, try to go into past, remember, oh, you know, this devotee did this and that. So how to have this kind of state of consciousness to really forget what's happened before? You know, because you keep this devotee in your mind and don't forget, forgive. You forgive him, but don't forget. Do you understand?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Please, can you say something?
Yeah, it's, you know, just like we're discussing, that it's not an artificial thing. It actually have to come, the spiritual advancement, depending on how we are spiritually advanced, then all these qualities naturally develop. It's not an artificial thing. By reading Srila Prabhupada books, by chanting attentively and trying to distribute these teachings, we will eventually make progress in spiritual life. And when we make progress, then all these qualities automatically develop. Just by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, all these good qualities naturally manifest. It's actually a blessing. It's actually a gift from Krishna. It's not like, you know, we don't read Prabhupada books and we don't chant nicely and we hope to be like, you know, saints or something. What's the difference between a karmi and a devotee? A devotee has sadhana and a karmi doesn't. So if we don't have sadhana, then our karmi qualities like spring up. Is that spring up or sprung up? Spring up. It's just in the surface. So we have to hear all the time, constantly. Like I was reading this pastime of Vasudev leper. Any worm would fall off from his body, he will pick it up and place it exactly where it was. It's not going to be possible for us because we take some kind of medicine to kill the worms in the stomach. But, you know, it's we have to start aspiring and start hearing. Eventually, you know, we will come to the stage where, like, we forgive and forget and just focus on things that are very important and not worry about things that are like superficial. Yes.
Nice class. Do you had one statement you made about 1/4 of the karmic reaction? I always heard it was 1/6 and I looked it up on the Vedabase. And the only reference I actually found so far, I think there are others, but there was one in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where it says, actually it's a comment from Gopi Pranada Prabhu, it says, in Vedic civilization, the ruler of a kingdom had the right to claim 1/6 of the citizen's total wealth to maintain the government and his personal household. A king also received 1/6 of the people's karmic reactions, which in a pious domain like that of the Pandavas meant a great stock of good karma. So I always heard 1/6. I just wonder if you had a reference for 1/4.
Yeah, there was a mistake from my part. I apologize. Amal Bhakta Prabhu, please.
Thank you for a wonderful class, as usual.
Thank you.
We hope we hear more of them in the future. Just one point I'd like to make in regard to the question preceding Archita's comment. It has to do with forgiving and forgetting. And the question was, well, It's easy to forgive, but how can we forget? So there are two kinds of forgetfulness. There's one which we might call positive, and the other we would call negative. And what he was referring to is the negative forgetfulness, in which you maintain your anger or your hostility or your distaste for that individual. Whenever you see him, you remember the offense that he made against you, and immediately you start to dislike him again. So that's what he's talking about, how to get rid of that forget. How can I feel that it never even happened, he's thinking. That's ideal. But in truly ideally, there's another kind of forgetfulness, and that is the forgetfulness in which just slipped my mind now. There's the negative. There's the positive side of not forgetting, which is actually very good. Because if I see somebody, for example, who has committed some offense, or whom I have committed an offense against, I definitely would want to remember it in the sense of it was a learning experience. You see, why should I forget the learning? Because I may repeat the offense again, you see. Or I may simply see, if I just see him in the negative sense, then of course I feel hostility. But I could see him in the positive sense, this person who may have committed an offense against me, in the sense that I learned something from him. He called me a fool, or he called me a rascal, he called me an idiot, and I was thinking I'm so smart, I'm so grand, I'm so glorious, I'm so wonderful. And he actually, although initially I became upset and angry, but in the ultimate analysis, what he's telling me is what was true. So what I'm trying to bring out is that sometimes we don't want to forget it. We can remember it in a very positive fashion, as opposed to just hating, disliking, and reproaching, and being afraid of the person. Mm-hmm. And if we remember the results of such past experiences, they can be beneficial. But if we forget them, then we lose the benefit of that particular experience. So it's good to remember, but not in a negative way, in a positive way.
Jai, thank you for the beautiful explanation. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.